grasped. Our builds. Our coloring. Whoever it was. I think they were looking for me.
Why?
He asked again, scrambling to sort through all she'd said. Because what I was reading last night. About the potential source of the power that injured you. I left some books about it on the table, and when the guards searched the area, the books were gone. She swallowed again. Who knew you were coming here? Kaol's blood chilled despite the heat.
We did not make it a secret.
It was instinct to rest his hand on a sword that was not there. A sword he had chucked in the aviary months ago.
It wasn't announced, but anyone could have learned. Long before we set foot here.
It was happening again. Here. A Volg demon had come to Antica. An underling at best, a prince at worst. It could be either. The attack Irene had described, fit Aelin's account of the remains she and Rowan had found from the Volg prince's victims in Wendlin. People teeming with life turned to husks, as if the Volg drank their every souls. He found himself saying quietly,
Prince Caution suspects Tumelin was killed.
Irene sat up, any lingering color draining from her face. Tumelin's body was not drained. Hafiza, the healer on high herself, declared it was a suicide. There was, of course, a chance the two deaths weren't connected. A chance that Caution was wrong about Tumelin. Part of Kaol prayed it was so. But even if they were unrelated, what had happened last night?
You need to warn the Khagan, Irene said,
seeming to read his mind. He nodded.
Of course. Of course I will.
Damned as the entire situation was, perhaps it was the inn he'd been waiting for with the Khagan. But he studied her haggard face, the fear there.
I'm sorry to have brought you into this. Has security been increased around the Torre?
Yes. A breathy push of sound. She scrubbed at her face.
And you? Did you come here under guard?
She threw him a frown. In plain daylight in the middle of the city? Kaol crossed his arms.
I would put nothing past the Volg.
She waved a hand. I won't be heading alone into any dark corridors anytime soon. None of us in the Torre will. Guards have been called in, stationed down every hall, in every few feet of the library. I don't even know where Hafiza summoned them from. Volg underlings could take bodies of anyone they wished. But their princes were vain enough that Kaol doubted they'd bother to take the form of a lowly guard. Not when they preferred beautiful young men. A collar and a dead cold smile flashed before his eyes. Kaol blew out a breath.
I am truly sorry. About that healer.
Especially if his being here had somehow triggered this attack. If they pursued Irene only because of her helping him. He added,
You should be on your guard, constantly.
She ignored the warning and scanned the room, the carpets, and the lush palms.
The girls. The young acolytes. They're frightened.
And you?
Before, he would have volunteered to stand watch, to guard her door, to organize soldiers because he knew how these things operated. But he was no captain, and he doubted the Khagan or his men would be inclined to listen to a foreign lord anyway. But he couldn't stop himself, that part of him, as he asked,
What can I do to help?
Irene's eyes shifted toward him, assessing, weighing. Not him. But he had the feeling it was something inside herself. So he kept still, kept his gaze steady while she looked inward. While she at last took a breath and said,
I teach a class once a week. After last night they were all too tired, so I let them sleep instead. Tonight we have a vigil for the healer who died. But tomorrow, she chewed on her lip. Again debating for a heartbeat before she added, I should like you to come.
What sort of class?
Irene toyed with a heavy curl. There is no tuition for students here, but we pay our way in other forms. Some help with the cooking, the laundry, the cleaning. But when I came, Hafiza... I told her I was good at all those things. I'd done them for a while. She asked me what else I knew beyond healing, and I told her... She bit her lip. Someone once taught me self-defense. What to do against attackers. Usually the male kind. It was an effort not to look at the scar across her throat. Not to wonder if she had learned it after, or if even that had not been enough. Irene sighed through her nose. I told Hafiza that I knew a little about it, and that I had made a promise to someone. To the person who taught me. To show and teach it to as many women as possible. So I have. Once a week I teach the acolytes, along with any older students, healers, servants, or librarians, who would like to know. This delicate, gentle-handed woman. He supposed he'd learned that strength could be hidden beneath the most unlikely faces. The girls are deeply shaken. There hasn't been an intruder in the Torre for a great while. I think it would go a long way if you were to join me tomorrow. To teach what you know. For a long moment, he stared at her, blinked.
You realize I'm in this chair.
And your mouth still works.
Tart, crisp words. He blinked again. They might not find me the most reassuring instructor.
No, they'll likely be swooning and sighing over you so much they'll forget to be afraid. His third and final blink made her smile slightly, grimly. He wondered what that smile would look like if she ever was truly amused, happy. The scar adds a touch of mystery, she said, cutting him off before he could remember the slice down his cheek. He studied her as she rose from the sofa to stride back to the desk and unpack her bag.
You would truly like me to be there tomorrow?
We'll have to figure out how to get you there, but it should not be so difficult.
Stuffing me into a carriage will be fine.
She stiffened, glancing over her shoulder. Save that anger for our training, Lord Westfall. She fished out a vial of oil and set it on the table. And you will not be taking a carriage.
A litter carried by servants, then? He'd sooner crawl.
A horse. Ever heard of one? He clenched the arms of his chair.
You need legs to ride.
So it's a good thing you still have both of them. She went back to studying whatever vials were in that bag. I spoke to my superior this morning. She has seen similarly injured people ride until they could meet with us. With special straps and braces. They are fashioning them for you in the workshops as we speak. He let those words sink in.
So you assumed I would come with you tomorrow.
Irene turned at last, satchel in her hand now. I assumed you would wish to ride regardless. He could only stare while she approached, vial in hand. Only a prim sort of irritation on her face.
Better than the stark fear.
He asked, voice a bit raw.
You think such a thing is possible?
I do. I'll arrive at dawn so we have enough time to figure it out. The lesson begins at 9.
To ride? Even if he could not walk, riding? Please do not give me this hope and let it crumble, he said hoarsely.
Irene set the satchel and vial down on the low-lying table before the sofa and motioned him to move closer. Good healers don't do such things, Lord Westfall. He hadn't bothered with a jacket today and had left his belt in the bedroom. Sliding his sweat-soaked shirt over his head, he made quick work of unbuttoning the tops of his pants.
It's Kaol, he said after a moment. My name, it's Kaol, not Lord Westfall.
He grunted as he hoisted himself from the chair onto the sofa.
Lord Westfall is my father.
Well, you're a lord, too.
Just Kaol.
Lord Kaol. He shot her a look as he positioned his legs. She did not reach to help, to adjust.
Here I was, thinking you still resented me.
If you help my girls tomorrow, I'll reconsider. From the gleam in those golden eyes, he very much doubted that. But a half-smile tugged on his mouth.
Another massage today?
Please, he nearly added. His muscles already ached from his exercising, and moving so much between bed and sofa and chair and bath. No. Irene gestured for him to lie face down on the sofa. I'm going to begin today.
You found information on it?
No, she repeated, tugging off his pants with that cool, swift efficiency. But after last night, I do not want to delay.
I will. I can.
He ground his teeth.
We'll find a way to protect you while you research.
He hated the words, felt them curl like rancid milk on his tongue, along his throat. I think they know that, she said quietly, and dabbed spots of oil along his spine. I'm not sure if it's the information, though, that they want to keep me from finding. His gut tightened, even as she ran soothing hands down his back. They lingered near that splotch at its apex.
What do you think they want, then?
He already suspected, but he wanted to hear her say it. Wanted to know if she thought the same, understood the risks as much as he did. I wonder, she said at last, if it was not just what I was researching, but also that I'm healing you. He craned his head to look at her as the words settled between them. She only stared at that mark on his spine, her tired face drawn. He doubted she'd slept.
If you're too tired.
I am not. He clenched his jaw.
You can nap here. I'll look after you.
Useless as it would be.
Then work on me later.
I will work on you now. I am not going to let them scare me away. Her voice did not tremble or waver. She added more quietly but no less fiercely. I once lived in fear of other people. I let other people walk all over me. Just because I was too afraid of the consequences for refusing. I did not know how to refuse. Her hand pushed down on his spine in a silent order to rest his head again. The day I reached these shores, I cast aside that girl. And I will be damned if I let her reemerge. Or let someone tell me what to do with my life, my choices again. The hair on his arms rose at the simmering wrath in her voice. A woman made of steel and crackling embers. Heat indeed flared beneath her palm, as she slid it up the column of his spine, toward that splotch of white. Let's see if it enjoys being pushed around for a change, she breathed. Irene laid her hand directly atop the scar. Kaol opened his mouth to speak. But a scream came out instead. Chapter 12. Burning, razor-sharp pain sliced down his back in brutal claws. Kaol arched, bellowing in agony. Irene's hand was instantly gone, and a crashing sounded. Kaol panted, gasping, as he pushed up onto his elbows to find Irene sitting on the low-lying table, her vial of oil overturned and leaking across the wood. She gaped at his back. At where her hand had been. He had no words, none beyond the echoing pain. Irene lifted her hands before her face as if she had never seen them before. She turned them this way and that. It doesn't just dislike my magic, she breathed. His arms buckled, so he lay down again on the cushions, holding her stare as Irene declared, It hates my magic.
You said it was an echo, not connected to the injury.
Maybe I was wrong.
Rowan healed me with none of those problems.
Her brows knotted at the name, and he silently cursed himself for revealing that piece of his history in this palace of ears and mouths. Were you conscious?
He considered. No, I was nearly dead.
She noticed the spilled oil then and cursed softly, mildly, compared to some other filthy mouths he'd had the distinct pleasure of being around. Irene lunged for her satchel, but he moved faster, grabbing his sweat-damp shirt from where he'd laid it on the sofa arm, and chucking it over the spreading puddle before it could drip onto the surely priceless rug. Irene studied the shirt, then his outstretched arm, now nearly across her lap.
Either your lack of consciousness during that initial healing kept you from feeling this sort of pain. Or perhaps, whatever this is had not settled.
His throat clogged.
You think I'm possessed?
By that thing that had dwelled inside the king, that had done such unspeakable things.
No. But pain can feel alive. Maybe this is no different. And maybe it does not want to let go.
Is my spine even injured?
He barely managed to ask the question.
It is, she said.
And some part of his chest caved in.
I sensed the broken bits, the tangled and severed nerves. But to heal those things, to get them communicating with your brain again, I need to get past that echo, or beat it into submission enough to have space to work on you.
Her lips pressed into a grim line.
This shadow, this thing that haunts you, your body, it will fight me every step of the way. Fight to convince you to tell me to stop, through pain.
Her eyes were clear.
Stark, do you understand what I am telling you?
His voice was low, rough.
That, if you are to succeed, I will have to endure that sort of pain, repeatedly.
I have herbs that can make you sleep, but with an injury like this, I think I won't be the only one who has to fight back against it. And if you are unconscious, I fear what it might try to do to you if you're trapped there, in your dreamscape, your psyche.
Her face seemed to pale further. Kaol slid his hand from where it still rested atop his shirt-turned mop and squeezed her hand.
Do what you have to.
It will hurt. Like that, constantly. Worse, likely. I will have to work my way down, vertebra by vertebra, before I even reach the base of your spine, fighting it and healing you at the same time.
His hand tightened on hers, so small compared to his.
Do what you have to,
he repeated.
And you, she said quietly, you will have to fight it as well.
He stilled at that. Irene went on.
If these things feed upon us by nature, if they feed and yet you are healthy,
she gestured to his body,
then it must be feeding upon something else, something within you.
I sense nothing.
She studied their joined hands, then slid her fingers away. Not as violent as dropping his hand, but the withdrawal was pointed enough.
Perhaps we should discuss it.
Discuss what?
She brushed her hair over a shoulder.
What happened? Whatever it is that you feed this thing.
Sweat coated his palms.
There is nothing to discuss.
Irene stared at him for a long moment. It was all he could do not to shrink from that frank gaze.
From what I've gleaned, there is quite a bit to discuss regarding the past few months. It seems as if it's been a tumultuous time for you recently. You yourself said yesterday that there is no one who loathes you more than yourself,
to say the least. And you're suddenly so eager to hear about it?
She didn't so much as flinch. If that is what is required for you to heal and be gone. His brows rose.
Well then, it finally comes out.
Irene's face was an unreadable mask that could have given Dorian a run for his money.
I assume you do not wish to be here forever. What with war breaking loose in our homeland, as you called it.
Is it not our homeland?
Silently, Irene rose to grab her satchel. I have no interest in sharing anything with Otterlin. He understood. He really did. Perhaps it was why he had still not told her who exactly that lingering darkness belonged to. And you, Irene went on, are avoiding the topic at hand. She rooted through her satchel. You'll have to talk about what happened sooner or later.
With all due respect, it's none of your business.
Her eyes flicked to him at that. You would be surprised by how closely the healing of physical wounds is tied to the healing of emotional ones.
I've faced what happened.
Then what is that thing in your spine feeding on?
I don't know.
He didn't care. She fished something out of the satchel at last, and when she strode back toward him, his stomach tightened at what she held. A bit. Crafted from dark, fresh leather. Unused. She offered it to him without hesitation. How many times had she handed one over to patients, to heal injuries far worse than his? Now would be the time to tell me to stop, Irene said, face grim. In case you'd rather discuss what happened these past few months. Kaol only lay on his stomach and slid the bit into his mouth. Nezrin had watched the sunrise from the skies. She'd found Prince Sartak waiting in his aerie in the hour before dawn. The minaret was open to the elements at its uppermost level, and behind the leather-clad prince. Nezrin had braced a hand on the archway to the stairwell, still breathless from the climb. Kadara was beautiful. Each of the Rook's golden feathers shone like burnished metal, the white of her breast bright as fresh snow, and her gold eyes had sized Nezrin up immediately, before Sartak even turned from where he'd been buckling on the saddle across her broad back. Captain Falik, the prince had said by way of greeting. You're up early. Casual words for any listening ears.
The storm last night kept me from sleep. I hope I am not disturbing you.
On the contrary.
In the dim light, his mouth quirked in a smile.
I was about to go for a ride, to let this fat hog hunt for her breakfast for once.
Kadara puffed her feathers in indignation, clicking her enormous beak, fully capable of taking a man's head off in one snip. No wonder Princess Hassar remained wary of the bird. Sartak chuckled, patting her feathers.
Care to join?
With the words, Nezrin suddenly had a sense of how very, very high the minaret was, and how Kadara would likely fly above it. With nothing to keep her from death but the rider and saddle now set in place. But to ride a Rook? Even better, to ride a Rook with a prince who might have information for them.
I am not particularly skilled with heights, but it would be my honor, Prince.
It had been a matter of a few minutes. Sartak had ordered her to switch from her midnight blue jacket to the spare leather one folded in a chest of drawers shoved against the far wall. He'd politely turned his back when she changed pants as well. Since her hair fell only to her shoulders, she had difficulty braiding it back. But the prince had fished into his own pockets and supplied her with a leather thong to pull it back into a knot. Always carry a spare, he told her, or else she'd be combing her hair for weeks. He'd mounted the keen-eyed Rook first, Kadara lowering herself like some oversized hen to the floor. He climbed her side in two fluid movements, then reached down a hand for Nezrin. She gingerly laid her palm against Kadara's ribs, marveling at the cool feathers, smooth as finest silk. Nezrin waited for the Rook to shift about and glare while Sartak hauled her into the saddle in front of him. But the prince's mount remained docile, patient. Sartak had buckled and harnessed them both into the saddle, triple-checking the leather straps. Then he clicked his tongue once, and Nezrin knew it wasn't polite to squeeze a prince's arm so hard the bone was likely to break. But she did so anyway, as Kadara spread her shining golden wings and leaped out. Leaped down.
Her stomach shot straight up her throat. Her eyes watered and blurred. Wind tore at her, trying to rip her from that saddle, and she clenched with her thighs so tightly they ached, while she gripped Sartak's arms, holding the reins so hard he chuckled in her ear. But the pale buildings of Antica loomed up, near blue in the early dawn, rushing to meet them as Kadara dove and dove, a star falling from the heavens, then flared those wings wide and shot upward. Nezrin was glad she had forgone breakfast, for surely it would have come spewing out of her mouth at what the motion did to her stomach. Within the span of a few beats, Kadara banked right toward the horizon just turning pink. The sprawl of Antica spread before them, smaller and smaller as they rose into the skies, until it was no more than a cobblestoned road beneath them, spreading into every direction, until she could spy the olive groves and wheat fields just outside the city, the country estates and small towns speckled about, the rippling dunes of the northern desert to her left, the sparkling, snaking band of rivers turning golden in the rising sun that crested over the mountains to her right. Sartak did not speak, did not point out landmarks, not even the pale line of the sister road that ran toward the southern horizon. No. In the rising light, he let Kadara have her head. The rook took them floating higher still, the air turning crisp, the awakening blue sky brightening with each mighty flap of her wings. Open. So open. Not at all like the endless sea, the tedious waves and cramped ship. This was breath. This was... She could not look fast enough, drink it all in. How small everything was. How lovely and pristine. A land claimed by a conquering nation, yet loved and nurtured. Her land. Her home. The sun and the scrub and the undulating grasslands that beckoned in the distance. The lush jungles and rice fields to the west. The pale sand dunes of the desert to the northeast. More than she could see in a lifetime, farther than Kadara could fly in a single day. An entire world, this land. The entire world contained here. She could not understand why her father had left. Why he had stayed when such darkness had crept into Otterlin. Why he had kept them in that festering city, where she so rarely looked up at the sky, or felt a breeze that did not reek of the briny aviary or the rubbish rotting in the streets. "You are quiet," the prince said, and it was more question than statement. Nezrin admitted in Halha, "I don't have words to describe it." She felt Sartak's smile near her shoulder. "That was what I felt, that first ride. And every ride since. I understand why you stayed at the camp those years ago. Why you are eager to return." A beat of quiet. "Am I so easy to read?" "How could you not wish to return?"
"Some consider my father's palace to be the finest in the world."
"It is." His silence was question enough. Rifthold's palace was nothing so fine, so lovely in a part of the land.
Sartak hummed, the sound reverberating into her back.
Then he said quietly,
"The death of my sister has been hard upon my mother. It is for her that I remain."
Nezrin winced a bit. "I'm so very sorry."
Only the rushing wind spoke for a time. Then Sartak said, "You said was, regarding Rifthold's royal palace. Why?"
"You heard what befell it, the glass portions."
"Ah." Another beat of quiet. "Shattered by the Queen of Terrasen, your ally."
"My friend." He craned his body around hers to peer at her face.
"Is she truly?"
"She is a good woman," Nezrin said, and meant it. "Difficult, yes, but some might say the same of any royalty."
"Apparently she found the former King of Otterlin so difficult that she killed him." Careful words.
The man was a monster, and a threat to all. His second, Parrington, remains that way. She did Aurelia a favor. Sartak angled the reins as Kadara began a slow, steady descent toward a sparkling river valley.
She is truly that powerful?
Nezrin debated the merits of the truth, or downplaying Aelin's might. She and Dorian both possess considerable magic. But I would say it is their intelligence that is the stronger weapon. Brute power is useless without it.
It's dangerous without it.
Yes,
Nezrin agreed, swallowing.
She had not been trained in the maze-like way of speaking at court. Is there such a threat within your court that warranted us needing to speak in the skies?
He could very well be the threat posed, she reminded herself. You have dined with my siblings. You see how they are. If I were to arrange a meeting with you, it would send a message to them that I am willing to hear your suit. Perhaps press it to our father. They would consider the risks and benefits of undermining me. Or whether it would make them look better to try to join my side.
And are you willing to hear us out? Sartak didn't answer for a long moment, only the screaming wind filling the quiet.
I would listen to you and Lord Westfall. I would hear what you know, what has happened to you both. I do not hold as much sway with my father as others, but he knows the Rook Riders are loyal to me.
I thought
that I was his favorite.
A low, bitter laugh.
I perhaps stand a chance at being named heir, but the Coggan does not select his heir based on whom he loves best. Even so, that particular honor goes to Duva and Caution.
Sweet-faced Duva, she could understand, but Caution?
He is loyal to my father to a fault. He has never schemed, never backstabbed. I've done it, plotted and maneuvered against them all to get what I want. But Caution, he may command the land armies and the horse lords. He may be brutal when required. But with my father, he is guileless. There has never been a more loving or loyal son. When our father dies, I worry what the others will do to Caution if he does not submit. Or worse, what his death will do to Caution himself.
She dared ask, what would you do to him?
Destroy him if he will not swear fealty. It remains to be seen what sort of threat or alliance he could pose. Only Duva and Argon are married, and Argon has yet to sire offspring. Though Caution, if he has his way, would likely sweep that young healer off her feet.
Irene. Strange that she has no interest in him.
A mark in her favor. It is not easy to love a Coggan's offspring.
The green grasses, still dewy beneath the fresh sun, rippled as Kadara swept toward a swift-moving river. With those enormous talons of hers, she could easily snatch up fistfuls of fish. But it was not the prey Kadara sought as she flew over the river, seeking something.
Someone broke into the Torre's library last night, Sartak said, as he monitored the Rook's hunt over the dark blue waters.
Mist off the surface kissed Nezrin's face. But the chill at his words went far deeper.
They killed a healer. Through some vile power that rendered her into a husk. We have never seen its like in Antica.
Nezrin's stomach turned over. With that description.
Who?
Why?
Irene Towers sounded the alarm. We searched for hours and found no trace, beyond missing books from where she had been studying, and where it stalked her. Irene was rattled, but fine.
Researching. Kaol had informed her last night that Irene had planned to do some research regarding wounds from magic.
From demons. Sartak asked casually, Do you know what Irene might have been looking into that posed such dark interest and theft of her books?
Nezrin considered. It could be a trick. His revealing something personal from his family, his life, to lull her into telling him secrets.
Nezrin and Kaol had not yielded any information of the keys, the Volg, or Erewhon to the Khagan or his children. They had been waiting to do so, to assess whom to trust. For if their enemies heard that they were hunting for the keys to seal the word gate?
No,
she lied.
But perhaps they are unannounced enemies of ours who wish to scare her and the other healers out of helping the captain. I mean, Lord Westfall.
Silence. She thought he'd push her on it. Waited for it as Kadara skimmed closer to the river's surface, as if closing in on some prey. It must be strange to bear a new title, with the former owner right beside you.
I was only captain for a few weeks before we left. I suppose I shall have to learn when I return.
If Irene is successful, among other possible victories.
Like bringing that army with them.
Yes,
was all she managed to say. Kadara dove, a sharp, swift motion that had Sartak tightening his arms around her, bracing her thighs with his own. She let him guide her, keeping them upright in the saddle as Kadara dipped into the water, thrashed, and sent something hurling onto the riverbank. A heartbeat later, she was upon it, talons and beak spearing and slashing. The thing beneath her fought, twisting and whipping. A crunch. Then silence. The rook calmed, feathers puffing, then smoothing against the blood now splattered along her breast and neck. Some had splashed onto Nezrin's boots as well.
Be careful, Captain Falik,
Sartak said, as Nezrin got a good look at the creature the rook now feasted upon. It was enormous, nearly 15 feet, covered in scales thick as armor. Like the marsh beasts of Ilway, but bulkier, fatter from the cattle it no doubt dragged into the water along these rivers.
There is beauty in my father's lands,
the prince went on, while Kadara ripped into that monstrous carcass.
But there is much lurking beneath the surface, too.
Chapter 13 Irene panted, her legs sprawled before her on the rug, her back resting against the couch on which Lord Kaol now gasped for breath as well. Her mouth was dry as sand, her limbs trembling so violently that she could barely keep her hands limp in her lap. A spitting sound and a little thump told her he'd removed the bit. He'd roared around it. His bellowing had been almost as bad as the magic itself. It was a void. It was a new, dark hell. Her magic had been a pulsing star that flared against the wall that the darkness had crafted between the top of his spine and the rest of it. She knew, knew without testing, that if she bypassed it, jumped right to the base of his spine, it would find her there too. But she had pushed, pushed and pushed until she was sobbing for breath. Still, that wall did not move. It only seemed to laugh, quietly and sibilantly, the sound laced with ancient ice and malice. She'd hurled her magic against the wall, letting its swarm of burning white lights attack in wave after wave, but nothing. And only at the end, when her magic could find no crack, no crevice to slide into. Only when she made to pull back did that dark wall seem to transform, to morph into something other. Irene's magic had turned brittle before it. Any spark of defiance in the wake of that healer's death had cooled. And she could not see, did not dare to look at what she felt gathering there, what filled the dark with voices, as if they were echoing down a long hall. But it had loomed, and she had slid a glance over her shoulder. The dark wall was alive, swimming with images, one after another, as if she were looking through someone's eyes. She knew on instinct they did not belong to Lord Kaol. A fortress of dark stone jutted up amid ash-colored barren mountains, its towers sharp as lances, its edges and parapets hard and slicing. Beyond it, coating the vales and plains amid the mountains, an army rippled away into the distance,
more campfires than she could count. And she knew the name for this place, the assembled host. Heard the name thunder through her mind as if it were the beat of a hammer on anvil. Morath. She'd pulled out, had yanked herself back to the light and heavy heat. Morath. Whether it was some true memory left by whatever power had struck him, whether it was something the darkness conjured from her own darkest terrors. Not real. At least, not in this room, with its streaming sunlight and chattering fountain in the garden beyond. But if it was indeed a true portrayal of the armies that Lord Kaol had mentioned yesterday, that was what she would face. The victims of that host, possibly even the soldiers within it, should things go very wrong. That was what awaited her back home. Not now. She would not think about this now, with him here. Fretting about it, reminding him of what he must face, what might be sweeping down upon his friends as they sat here. Not helpful. To either of them. So Irene sat there on the rug, forcing her trembling to abate with each deep breath she inhaled through her nose and out her mouth, letting her magic settle and refill within her as she calmed her mind, letting Lord Kaol pant on the couch behind her, neither of them saying a word. No, this would not be a usual healing, but perhaps delaying her return, remaining here to heal him for however long it took. There might be others like him on those battlefields, suffering from similar injuries. Learning to face this now, however harrowing. Yes, this delay might turn fruitful, if she could stomach, if she could endure that darkness again. Find some way to shatter it. Go where you fear to tread. Indeed. Her eyes drifted closed. At some point, the servant girl had come back with the ingredients Irene had invented. Had taken one look at them and vanished. It had been hours ago. Days ago. Hunger was a tight knot in her belly. A strangely mortal feeling compared to the hours spent attacking that blackness. Only half aware of the hand she'd placed on his back. Of the screaming that came from him every time her magic shoved against that wall. He had not once asked her to stop, had not begged for reprieve. Shaking fingers brushed her shoulder.
Are you?
Each of his words was a burnt rasp. She'd have to get him peppermint tea with honey. She should call to the servant if she could remember to speak. Muster the voice herself.
All right.
Irene cracked her eyelids open as his hand settled on her shoulder. Not from any affection or concern, but because she had a feeling that the exhaustion lay so heavily upon him that he couldn't move it again. And she was drained enough that she couldn't muster the strength to brush off that touch, as she'd done earlier.
I should ask you if you're all right,
she managed to say, voice raw.
Anything?
No.
The sheer lack of emotion behind the word told her enough of his thoughts. His disappointment. He paused for a few heartbeats before he repeated,
No.
She closed her eyes again. This could take weeks, months, especially if she did not find some way to shove back that wall of darkness. She tried and failed to move her legs.
I should get you.
Rest.
The hand tightened on her shoulder.
Rest,
he said again.
You're done for the day, she said. No additional exercise.
I mean you. Rest.
Each word was labored. Irene dragged her stare toward the large clock in the corner. Blinked once.
Twice.
Five. They had been here for 5 hours. He had endured it all that time. 5 hours of this agony. The thought alone had her drawing up her legs, groaning as she braced a hand on the low-lying table and rallied her strength, pushing up, up until she was standing, weaving on her feet, but standing. His arms slid beneath him, the muscles of his bare back rippling as he tried to push himself up.
Don't,
she said,
He did so anyway. The considerable muscles in his arms and chest did not fail him as he shoved upward until he was sitting, staring at her, glassy-eyed. Irene rasped,
"You need tea."
"Kaja." The name was little more than a push of breath. The servant immediately appeared, too quickly. Irene studied her closely as the girl slipped in. She'd been listening, waiting. Irene did not bother to smile as she said,
"Peppermint tea. Lots of honey."
Kaol added, "Two of them." Irene gave him a look, but sank onto the couch beside him. The cushions were slightly damp. With his sweat, she realized, as she saw it gleaming on the contours of his bronzed chest. She shut her eyes, just for a moment. She didn't realize it was far longer than that until Kaja was setting two delicate teacups before them, a small iron kettle steaming in the center of the table. The woman poured generous amounts of honey into both, and Irene's mouth was too dry, tongue too heavy to bother telling her to stop, or she'd make them ill from the sweetness. The servant stirred both in silence, then handed the first cup to Kaol. He merely passed it to Irene. She was too tired to object as she wrapped her hands around it, trying to rally the strength to raise it to her lips. He seemed to sense it. He told Kaja to leave his cup on the table, told her to go. Irene watched as through a distant window while Kaol took her cup and lifted it to her lips. She debated shoving his hand out of her face. Yes, she'd work with him. No, he was not the monster she'd initially suspected he'd be. Not in the way she'd seen men be. But letting him this close? Letting him tend to her like this?
"You can either drink it," he said, his voice a low growl, "or we can sit like this for the next few hours."
She slid her eyes to him, found his stare to be level, clear despite the exhaustion. She said nothing.
"So that's the line,"
Kaol murmured, more to himself than her.
"You can stomach helping me, but I can't return the favor. Or can't do anything that steps beyond your idea of what... who I am."
He was more astute than most people likely gave him credit for. She had a feeling the hardness in his rich brown eyes was mirrored in her own.
"Drink."
Pure command laced his voice. A man used to being obeyed, to giving orders.
"Resent me all you want, but drink the damn thing."
And it was the faint kernel of worry in his eyes. A man used to being obeyed, yes, but a man also inclined to care for others, look after them. Driven to do it by a compulsion he couldn't leash, couldn't train out of him, couldn't have broken out of him. Irene parted her lips, a silent yielding. Gently, he set the porcelain teacup against her mouth and tipped it for her. She sipped once. He murmured an encouragement. She did so again. So tired. She had never been so tired in her life. Kaol pushed the cup against her mouth a third time, and she drank a full gulp. Enough. He needed it more than she did. He sensed she was likely to bark at him, withdrew the cup from her mouth, and merely sipped it. One gulp. Two. He drained it and grabbed the other one, offering her the first sips again before he took the dregs. Insufferable man. Irene must have said as much, because a half-smile kicked up on one side of his face.
"You're not the first to call me that,"
he said, his voice smoother, less hoarse.
"I won't be the last, I'm sure,"
she muttered. Kaol simply gave her that half-smile again and stretched to refill both cups. He added the honey himself, less than Kaja had, the right amount. He stirred them, his hands steady.
"I can do it," Irene tried to say.
"So can I,"
was all he said. She managed to hold the cup this time. He made sure she was well on to drinking hers before he lifted his own to his lips.
I should go.
The thought of getting out of the palace, let alone the trek to the Torre, then the walk up the stairs to her rooms.
Rest. Eat. You must be starving.
She eyed him.
You're not?
He'd exercised heavily before she'd arrived. He had to be famished from that alone.
I am, but I don't think I can wait for dinner.
He added,
You could join me.
It was one thing to heal him, work with him, let him serve her tea. But to dine with him? The man who had served that butcher? The man who had worked for him while that dark army was amassed down in Morath? There it was. That smoke in her nose, the crackle of flame and screaming. Irene leaned forward to set her cup on the table, then stood. Every movement was stiff, sore.
I need to return to the Torre,
she said, knees wobbling.
The vigil is at sundown.
Still a good hour from now, thankfully. He noted her swaying and reached for her, but she stepped out of his range.
I'll leave the supplies.
Because the thought of lugging that heavy bag back?
Let me arrange a carriage for you.
I can ask at the front gate, she said.
If someone was hunting her, she'd opt for the safety of a carriage. She had to grip the furniture as she passed to keep upright. The distance to the door seemed eternal.
Irene.
She could barely stand at the door, but she paused to look back.
The lesson tomorrow.
The focus had already returned to those brown eyes.
Where do you want me to meet you?
She debated calling it off. Wondered what she'd been thinking, asking him of all people to come. But 5 hours. 5 hours of agony and he had not broken. Perhaps it was for that alone that she had declined dinner. If he had not broken, then she would not break. Not in seeing him as anything but what he was, what he'd served.
I'll meet you in the main courtyard at sunrise.
Mustering the strength to walk was an effort. But she did it, put one foot in front of the other. Left him alone in that room, still staring after her.
5 hours of agony,
and she'd known it had not all been physical. She had sensed, shoving against that wall, that the darkness had also showed him things on the other side of it. Glimmers had sometimes shivered past her. Nothing she could make out, but they felt. They had felt like memories. Nightmares. Perhaps both. Yet he had not asked her to stop. And part of Irene wondered, as she trudged through the palace, if Lord Kaol had not asked her to stop, not just because he'd learned how to manage pain, but also because he somehow felt he deserved it. Everything hurt. Kaol did not let himself think about what he had seen. What had flashed through his mind as that pain had racked him, burned and flayed and shattered him. What and who he'd seen. The body on the bed. The collar on a throat. The head that had rolled. He could not escape them. Not while Irene had worked. So the pain had ripped through him. So he had seen it over and over. So he had roared and screamed and bellowed. She'd stopped only when she'd slid to the floor. He'd been left hollow. Void. She still had not wanted to spend more than a moment necessary with him. He didn't blame her. Not that it mattered. Though he reminded himself that she'd asked him to help tomorrow. In whatever way he could. Kaol ate his meal where Irene had left him, still in his undershorts. Kaja didn't seem to notice or care, and he was too aching and tired to bother with modesty. Aelin would likely have laughed to see him now. The man who had stumbled out of her room after she'd declared that her cycle had arrived. Now sitting in this fine room, mostly naked and not giving a shit about it. Nezrin returned before sundown, her face flushed and hair windblown. One look at her tentative smile told him enough. At least she'd been somewhat successful with Sartak, Perhaps she'd managed to do what it seemed he himself was failing to, raising a host to bring back home. He'd meant to speak to the Coggin today, about the threat last night's attack had posed. Meant to, and yet it was now late enough to prevent arranging such a meeting. He barely heard Nezrin, as she whispered about Sartak's possible sympathy, her ride on his magnificent Rook. Exhaustion weighed on him so heavily, he could hardly keep his eyes open, even while he pictured those Rooks squaring off against Iron Teeth witches and wyverns, even while he debated who might survive such battles. But he managed to give the order that curdled on his tongue.
Go hunting, Nezrin.
If one of Erewhon's Vog minions had indeed come to Antica, time was not on their side. Every step, every request might be reported back to Erewhon. And if they were pursuing Irene, either for reading up on the Vog or for healing the hand of the King of Otterlin, he didn't trust anyone here enough to ask them to do this. Anyone other than Nezrin. Nezrin had nodded at his request, had understood why he'd nearly spat it out. To let her go into danger. To hunt that sort of danger. But she'd done it before in Rifthold. She reminded him of that, gently. Sleep beckoned, turning his body foreign and heavy. But he managed to make his final request.
Be careful.
Kaol didn't resist when she helped him into the chair, then wheeled him into his room. He tried and failed to lift himself into bed, and was only vaguely aware of her and Kaja hauling him onto it like a slab of meat. Irene. She never did such things. Never wheeled him when he could do so himself. Constantly told him to move himself instead. He wondered why. Was too damn tired to wonder why. Nezrin said she would make his apologies at dinner, and went to change. He wondered if the servants heard the whine of the whetstone against her blades from her bedroom door. He was asleep before she left. The clock in the sitting room distantly chiming 7. No one paid Nezrin much heed at dinner that night, and no one paid her any heed later, when she donned her fighting knives, sword, and bow and quiver, and slipped into the city streets. Not even the Coggin's wife. As Nezrin stopped by a large stone garden on her way out of the palace, a glimmer of white caught her eye, and sent her ducking behind one of the pillars flanking the courtyard. Within a heartbeat, she removed her hand from the long knife at her side. Clad in white silk, her long curtain of dark hair unbound, the Grand Empress strolled, silent and grave as a wraith, down a walkway wending through the rock formations of the garden. Only moonlight filled the space. Moonlight and shadow, as the Empress strode alone and unnoticed, her simple gown flowing behind her as if on a phantom wind. White for grief. For death. The Grand Empress's face was unadorned, her coloring far paler than that of her children. No joy limned her features. No life. No interest in either. Nezrin lingered in the shadows of the pillar, watching the woman drift farther away, as if she were wandering the paths of some dreamscape. Or perhaps, some empty, barren hell. Nezrin wondered if it was at all similar to the ones she herself had walked, during those initial months after her mother's passing. Wondered if the days also bled together for the Grand Empress. If food was ash on her tongue, and sleep was both craved and elusive. Only when the Coggin's wife strode behind a large boulder, vanishing from sight, did Nezrin continue on, her steps a little heavier. Antica under the full moon was a wash of blues and silvers, interrupted by the golden glow of lanterns hanging from public dining rooms, and the carts of vendors selling cave and treats. A few performers plucked out melodies on lutes and drums, a few gifted enough to make Nezrin wish she could pause. But stealth and speed were her allies tonight. She stalked through the shadows, sorting through the sounds of the city. Various temples were interspersed amongst the main thoroughfares, some crafted of marble pillars, some beneath peaked wooden roofs and painted columns, some mere courtyards filled with pools or rock gardens or sleeping animals.